Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
This podcast is protected by Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed, Lady Amanda of House Ryan, Lady Rajal of House Stevens, Sir Ron of House Golson, Lord Robert the Unfrozen of House Butler, Lord Paramount of Skagos Island. Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Bud Knight, Fist of the Dragon, Maker of Gains.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful, Stealer of Hearts, Bandit of Time, Hero of Shreve. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into the prologue of A Clash of Kings, and in the Maester's Study we will be covering Dragonstone.
Yeah. Wow, man. We're back.
Back.
Okay. Unlike our Lord and Savior George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
You know, the king of the whole deal. Hey, we come back, all right? We don't leave you hanging. So it was good. You know, we had a nice little break there. Took some time to recover, to think about where do we want the show to go? Let's make it bigger, better, bolder.
Yep.
Back.
Yep. Yep, I'm hearing you. It's season two. It's just we're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. We're into excited. A Clash of Kings, man. Everything it gets, big, different. This is also it would be season two and three of the show. Covers the second book, A Clash of Kings, man. You know, we're gonna be venturing into new territory here. We didn't talk about. You know, all we talked about was the seven and the old gods. Well, now there's a new god, singular.
Yeah.
Patchface, what's his deal? We're going to meet new characters. Davos, the Tyrells. Theon gets some POV chapters. Stannis Baratheon. I mean, the one true king. There's so much.
Right. I know, man. Yeah, House Florent. I mean, like some of the things that as we were reading this first little bit, and I've read even the first couple chapters just to kind of refresh my memory. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing the different houses and remembering, like, the old alliances, the old marriage pacts that had been created and how those are going to affect this great war. It's bigger, as you say. So much more to it.
It's bigger. It's bolder. Just there's a lot of world building in this prologue chapter we'll be discussing today. But man, you know, Sir, how was your break, man? How's your time off a little bit?
Dude, good. I am ready to go. Here's the thing. I thrive in the fall. I don't know why. I love the fall. It's just my time. Like the colder it gets, I guess I'm like a Stark in that, right? Winter is coming and I'm freaking prepared. All right. So I don't know. I've been having some almost every other night, I have a fire out back, and I'm just like, I've been meditating, sending smoke signals to my friends, just like, I don't know, man, ready to go.
Nice, so, nice. Yeah.
How about you?
All right, well, hey, man, I've been good, you know? Took some time out for, you know, a little break there, and just started hammering out some work on some other projects we've been working on. Took some time to rest, you know. We always record on Sundays, and I always get up early, make sure we get that recording done and stuff like that. Just gearing up for 2020, going to be a good year, and yeah, man, I'm just yeah, I, taking some time actually to dive back into the content, like, deeper, not just, oh, every week, make sure I listen to the chapter, because we do that every now and then. You know, but then it's like, well, I don't get a, I just haven't taken, haven't taken the time to, like, really, like, listen to some stuff in Dance of Dragons, listen to some stuff in Dunkin' Egg, listen to some stuff in Fire and Blood, and kind of like, oh yeah, refresh my memory on some of that other areas, just because we're always, you know, going along chapter by chapter, that it's like, oh yeah, I got to think about that. And then, you know, studying some theories and stuff like that. So it's been good. It's been refreshing.
Yeah, well, and really, again, more and more George will just weave and build his world, as you say, and there's more histories and stuff, and that's why, you know, all of those histories that we did in season one are so important and will come back up again in this in this book, so it's going to be great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, man, hey, before we jump into our small council, there's definitely some news to be talking about. We do want to give a special shout-out to some other patrons as well, our Sworn Swords. We have Sir Anonymous of House Anonymous, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Sir Chris of House Faber, Sir David of House Frazier, Lady Dawn of House Watson, Lady Aaron of House Hickman, Sir James of House Nutter. Special shout out to him.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yep. He has designed our website, which you can check out at bendtheneepodcast.com. You can send us ravens there, you know, which we will read on the show. So super shout out to him. Sir Jeffrey of House Wilson, Lady Jessica of House Neil, Sir John of House McNapsey, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Lady Michelle of House Ramsden, Sir Ralph the Dornish Wolf, Sir Stephen of House Vilken, and Sir William of House Lombard. You know, hey man, you know, we took some time as we were in the break and we're trying to up the show. We're like, you know, we need to give a shout out to some of these other patrons too. So
yeah, man, yeah, it's great. It's awesome. We've actually got even our Raven today kind of talks about just the end of season one, the beginning of season two, and how things are going to just be, I don't know, like how great season one for us was. And
it was an amazing ride.
Yeah, yeah. And then just what this is going to be like, it's just exciting. So, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Hey, small council. We got some news to talk about here.
Right.
So we know that HBO has had a multiple successor shows planned. There was the one that I think everyone was kind of on board with for what seemed like the longest time. It was kind of called Blood Moon or The Longest Night or The Long Night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to kind of take place during the Age of Heroes. And that one seemed like it was all greenlit to go. And then a couple like weeks or like maybe like a month or so ago, we heard rumors of a second one that was going to be centered around like the Fire and Blood era, the Targaryen, the Dance with Dragons.
Right.
And I was like, oh man. And as soon as they announced that one, I was kind of like, well, that sounds like a lot cooler than the Long Night, just because it seems like it's just a cooler period of time because we know more about it. Not that the Long Night couldn't be cool, we just didn't know about it. And then it was like a week or so ago they announced that the Long Night one was canceled and that they were going to be going forward with the Targaryen one. And then I read you know, Gurr talk about this on his blog, and it seems like this long or the Dance with Dragons one, the Fire and Blood one, is actually way further along in development than we thought.
Yeah.
Like, way further along. I mean, it's greenlit. So, here we go. This is from Gurr's, you know, website, not a blog. The dragons take wing. He said, the dragons are coming back. Last night in Hollywood at the Warner Media Day, HBO made it official. We have greenlit for a Game of Thrones successor show. Not just a pilot, but a full season order for 10 episodes. So it's going to be called House of the Dragon is the title of the new show. And needless to say, it will be centered around House Targaryen, set a couple of centuries before the events of A Song of Ice and Fire, based upon the history from Archmaester Gildane's Fire and Blood. They even have a cool logo there. It says House of the Dragon is the Targaryen sigil, and it says Fire Will Reign, R-E-I-G-N. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He says the new series will be helmed by a couple of great showrunners, Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik, who, you know, Miguel should be known to Game of Thrones fans. He directed Battle of the Bastards as well as The Long Night. He's directed most of the very large battle episodes in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, he says, you know, there's nobody better. And so then he says, Ryan Condal is new to Westeros, but not to me. He says, I first met Ryan when he came to New Mexico for a shoot for, the sci-fi series, Colony, which I haven't seen, but I think it was on like sci-fi, right? I think it was on Sons, something like that. He said, you know, and Gurr is very into sci-fi. And actually, almost he's more into sci-fi than he is kind of fantasy.
Right.
He says he's a terrific writer and he's been a fan of my book since before we met. He tells me he discovered the series just after A Storm of Swords was published. He says he's loved the books for 19 years. He says he is also a huge fan of the Duncan Egg series. In fact, that was the show he wanted to do.
What?
Yeah, but he says, I'm not prepared to bring Duncan Egg to television until I've written quite a few more stories. He says, so working with Ryan is on the development of House of the Dragon has been a dream. Okay, so then, you know, all that kind of stuff. So then he goes on to talk a little about the development of it. House of the Dragon has been in development for several years, though the title has changed a couple of times during that process. It was actually the first concept I pitched to HBO when we started talking about a successor show way back in the summer of 2016. If you'd like to know a little bit more, he said, I can't really spill those beans, but you could pick up a copy of the two anthologies I did with Gardner Dozios, which is Dangerous Women's and Rogues. Now, those are the two novellas, right? Which is The Blacks and the Greens and The Princess and the Queen, which actually kind of find their way into Fire and Blood.
Yeah. Yep.
You can read those in there. He says, so it says Ryan has done a considerable amount of writing on the House of the Dragon, but a lot of work remains ahead of us. There's a lot of stuff, you know, production stuff to get all set up. He says, we'll probably be returning to a lot of the same scenes and countries that Dan and Dave used for Game of Thrones. I expect to be involved in this to some extent, but who knows if things work out. I may be able to script a few episodes as I did for the first four seasons of Game of Thrones. But, and then in bold, you know, all caps, let me make this perfectly clear.
Wow.
I am not taking on any scripts until I have finished and delivered Winds of Winter. Winter is still coming, and Winds remains my priority. As much as I'd love to write an episode of House, as he's just kind of shortening it there. Mm-hmm. You know, then he talks a little bit about how it's kind of disappointing that we did all this work on The Long Night, and for whatever reason, HBO decided to cancel it. He says that he doesn't think that it was going to be a matter of one or the other. Just that they just decided not to go forward with that one and to go forward with this one. So it wasn't like HBO was sitting there saying, well, it's going to compete. Which one do we think is better?
Okay. Yeah.
So he says, I believe there's plenty of room for Westeros on television. If there's enough room for multiple CSI shows, well, Westeros and Essos are a lot bigger with thousands of years of histories and enough tales and legends and characters for a dozen shows. Mm-hmm. He says, heartbreaking as it is to work on a pilot and pour your blood and sweat and tears into it and have it all come to naught, it's actually not uncommon in the television business. He says, I've been there myself more than once. And then he kind of thanks everyone for the hard work that they did on the pilot we'll probably never see.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I have so we'll just kind of dive into our thoughts a little bit on this. And then I have a question about it. And,
sure.
You know, Sir Ezra, will HBO pressure him, which I kind of was reading an argument to maybe not like squeeze his arm or whatever, but just say, you know, it'd be really great is if you were to publish that Fire and Blood Volume 2, since that would kind of go along with that. And, you know, how will that affect Winds of Winter?
Man, it just depends on how much. Like is Winds of Winter close to being finished?
Who knows? You know, every time we talk about it, we're like, I think it's close. We may never see it.
Dude, we've been talking about this since back before the podcast even started, when we were doing, you know, YouTube videos and stuff. Like, I don't know. It's crazy. And I understand this is taking much longer because of all the stuff that he's doing, which he's talked about. Like, the success of the show has brought people into the series. So that's great. And, you know, that's awesome that happened. But now the series, it's not finished. And it just sort of like, it's almost too bad he wasn't further along with his second to last book and had that drop midway through, you know, sometime during the original, you know, Game of Thrones HBO series. And then was only working on the last book. But like, it must have stopped him, like, in his tracks or something, because it's just taken so long. And I've always been someone to say, let him finish. Let him take his time. Let him write a masterpiece. I don't know. You know, I've heard him say, like,
do you think he's even writing?
Oh, geez. Don't ask me that. I do think he's writing. I do. I just think, like, I actually think he is, as much as he might say he's not influenced by the show or what happened with the show and everything, I think he has his, like, what he wants in mind at the end, some of those major things that he wants to have happen. But he also is someone who has admitted that as he writes, his characters evolve. That's why this web continues to spread. And there are more and more little subplots and side stories and other little characters who he weaves back in. It's amazing. It's amazing the way he does that. Like, he actually talks about it. I wish I would have found the article and brought it with me. But there was reading somewhere where he talks about the two different types of writers and how some people from the onset have the entire thing donezo. They know where they're going. It's like, I forget the analogy that he used, but like they know everything, right? He has a general idea, a premise, starts with a wall, and men looking off into this wall, protecting a kingdom, and then he just kind of goes. And that's what he, and then it's just kept evolving, kind of whatever. He put it in a drawer for years, brought it back, you know, before he wrote the first book. And so that's the type of writer he is. He lets his characters grow. And he's also the writer. So life influences him, you know, life, right. Things that are happening in his life. And then also all the stuff with the show. So I don't know, man. It's also probably a hard, like, think about winter and writing stuff that's like a little bit like depressing. And I don't know, like, I don't know what the characters are going to be going through necessarily, but it's some hard times. So like, that's something else. Like, he's very much in tune and connected with his characters and what's going on. So maybe winter's got him down. I mean, I don't know. Like,
I mean, hey, it's possible.
It really is. And I just think, so your question is like, will HBO with this, moving forward with this show, pressure him into Fire and Blood? I mean, clearly he admits here in 2016, he was having, you know, talks with HBO and pitching other shows. So that clearly was eating into some of his writing time, right. And, you know, and things. And also, like, he can do what he wants. I think he wants to finish the series, but if he came out and said, you know what, it's just too much, my health, whatever, yada yada, he could stop. I mean, I don't think he's going to, but it's like,
you know, it could also be, you know, last night you and I were talking, and we were just like on the phone, obviously not recording or anything, but yeah. You know, you and I were talking about finishing series, right? Because I had like just finished a, you know, a big video game I've been playing. That's like, you know, one of those games I play, like, you know, really heavy, big RPGs where you're playing this game for like 100 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I was, you know, it's like about us. And it's the same when you, like, you watch like a something that has like 8 or 9 seasons, or you finish a book series and you get kind of depressed. You're like, man, like, you know, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and there's nothing quite like that first ride when you're going through and you, like, you know, you're reading about these characters, or, you know, listening or watching or playing or whatever. And when you get to the end, it's kind of like, oh, they're gone, you know?
Yes, right.
And it's probably also hard because, you know, it was so much fun. I mean, even it's like this book series is coming out, and you don't want it to end, right? The TV show, it's such a high, like you're writing it. Like, look at J.K. Rowling. Sure. I mean, yeah. after Harry Potter, like, you know, she's still focused on, no, I want to build it and make it different and make it bigger and better. You know, that's why she, you know, they invented Pottermore, and she's on Twitter still, like, developing these characters that are long over, like, just adding backstory to them. Right.
Yep.
You know, and now they move into the Fantastic Beasts and stuff like that. And she can still actually, you know, it's not so far away that you're writing a, you can still influence the main set of characters by adding depth to them and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe that plays part of it. Maybe it's, you know, this Gurr has been somebody who has had, you know, moderate success outside of Game of Thrones. I wouldn't really say that he's had major success outside of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if you can watch interviews with him, he'll talk about it. You know, he wrote for like the Twilight Zone, and he wrote for TV and all of this stuff. And any interview you watch him where he shows his house, it's like, it's mostly sci-fi. And that's what he writes really outside of Game of Thrones, you know, Song of Ice and Fire is sci-fi.
Yeah.
And so it's like, now you have this huge major success. And do you really want it to be over? And you can always keep people interested by at least having that, like, that final book.
Yeah, that for sure. Well, and another thing too, I think when he was writing, he had wove in so much. He like history. He talks about how Tolkien did the opposite. Like when Tolkien created the Lord of the Rings, you know, the Hobbit and what have you, he had a backstory. He had a fully developed languages backstory, age upon age of like histories with his notes, his Silmarillion, all that good stuff. And George has often said that most writers now in modern times pretend that they do. Like, he'll weave a line or two in there about, like, the Dragon Knight, you know, and he'll talk about some of these ancient Targaryen kings or ancient Stark kings. But he's like, really, there was nothing there. I didn't know everything about it. I just sort of had a general idea, whereas Tolkien had everything kind of detailed out. So I think in his mind, he decided, I want to do that. I actually want it. They call Fire and Blood, like, the Girmarillion. Right, like they want it to be. Right. He wanted that to be kind of his big history, and kind of like I have all of this stuff that I'm also weaving into the main series. So he took time to mm-hmm. do that. And again, back to your question, will they push him for a Fire and Blood Volume 2? They actually may, and he may even be inclined to do that. One, because it's easier, less pressure, maybe, and maybe it helps him develop the story and where he's going. I don't know if he needs that or not, but. You know, if he wants to make it better and weave in more of these histories and interconnect things, maybe he does that. Maybe he is doing that already, because it seems like he does that and then he goes back and further develops the history of it. And while it's in his mind, that may be the time to stop and go do it. So, I don't know, man. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what right. happens. It's great to hear him say that he's pushing to get wins done, and I love that. And I also say, get off his back, let the man do what he needs to do. He's a great writer, one of the greatest.
Absolutely, so. Yeah. I mean, hey, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, if it takes another 3 years, but when it comes out, it's amazing. Well, then it was worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
If he rushes it and it sucks, I mean, look at season 8. Everyone was like, it was rushed. It was, you know, it wasn't good. I mean, yeah. would you rather waited another 6 months for season 8, or yeah. and had it been way better? Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
I would have. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and there's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm just like, let it be. We're also, it's unique that we're in this time where we get to interact. This writer is still here. He is one of the greats, and we get to watch him go through this process, and he's developing this right in front of us. And we're going to be the first people to kind of consume it, because this will be a series that years and years and years from now, people will read, and it will be one of those great series. I wasn't around when Tolkien developed, when The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings came out and all that kind of stuff. But wow, those were great times. And actually over time, that's really how his series kind of grew and became successful. George is having sort of the opposite. It's happening right now in his lap as he's developing this series right. and finishing it. And that's unique too. So, man, I don't know. I'm so excited. I'm so glad they're doing the show, because he definitely has the volume one done. And I didn't mention it here, but it is about the Dance of Dragons, correct? Or are they going back to Aegon's mm-hmm. conquest?
It's going to be Dance yeah. of Dragons.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what they talk about. And I think the cool thing about this is, you know, it was probably harder when the main show was going. Because it's like, this is different. It's still in the same world, but it's like something that you're not as involved with. Yep. Whereas this is racing against you, and so you feel that pressure. And then you're also seeing like how are fans reacting to the show, and this is my work, and all of that stuff. And it probably causes you to second guess yourself, which I know he says he doesn't, but you know, I think it would. It's just not human to second guess yourself.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, that interview that I saw that he did, where he really did talk about how it kind of, I guess like a more human, I don't know. He showed that the show outpacing him affected him. The further it got, it went along and he saw the pace at which they were moving and realized he wasn't going to be able to produce wins before it was over. It really affected him. And he kind of just said, I think there were moments where he just flat out said he was depressed and just had to stop.
Yeah, I would yeah. be.
Because he's like, man, this is it's so overwhelming. They're going so quick, and I have so much more to develop. I didn't anticipate this. One thing he said, he really did not anticipate. He thought he would have plenty of time to get the book done. And when you see that you didn't estimate it correctly or whatever, that sucks, and it's hard to right. kind of deal with. So I say give him a space, let him finish. When he gives us the updates, I'm happy for him, but I don't know. I just say, like, it is what it is, and it's also just sort of this great time where we can kind of, you know, we laugh like, oh, wins come, you know, coming out or whatever. We kind of, but we're not here bashing George, saying he needs to get it done. This is ridiculous, yada, yada, yada. And if you want to do that, this is, get out of here, okay? This is the master writer. Let him finish, and it's going to be amazing when it does come out. So that's what I'm looking for. And then some people are going, well, now, hold on a second. If it actually ends up to be like kind of like season 8, then I don't know, man. But it's not going to be. It's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it's, you know, if Winds of Winter sucks, then I mean,
right.
You know, and then he feels like, well, I felt rushed. You can't go back and rewrite it.
No, you only, that's the thing. That's a really good point, is that if he feels pressured and he just, I go, well, I have to get it out for the sake of getting it out. You know, like that just kind of, that sucks. That's not what we want. So remember that when you're on Twitter and you're bashing George for, you know, not getting this done in time, in your, in quote, you know, in time. So,
right.
But man, right. I don't know. Still exciting. A lot of exciting stuff, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Let's dive into the Maester study a little bit here. As we get ready for I think about it more as the patch face chapter.
Yeah.
He's there, and we're gonna talk about him. But you know, this takes place on Dragonstone, which is actually what we've only you know, if you go back in time to when this first came out, we've only actually just heard of this place of Dragonstone. So, you know, Dragonstone was actually initially the seat of Aegon the Conqueror. The Targaryens kind of had this as their western outpost, you know, from in Valyria, and it just kind of overlooking Westeros. But it kind of changes throughout time and becomes a much bigger deal, you know. So it's a castle located on the island of the same name at the entrance to Blackwater Bay, located below the Dragon Mont and shaped from stone to look like dragons. Dragonstone was originally the seat of House Targaryen in Westeros that had been colonized and fortified as the westernmost outpost of the Valyrian Freehold. The castle has a dark reputation. Mm-hmm. So after Aegon's conquest of the Seven Kingdoms, Dragonstone in the newly created Crown Lands serves as the seat to the heir apparent, known as the Prince of Dragonstone.
Yeah, real quick, like on that point. So the Prince of Dragonstone, that is important, and you're about to read it here. But like, that's the whole point: is the next person up to the throne is there. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and we'll get into this a little bit because Stannis is quite upset actually by this. But I don't think he shouldn't be. I don't think he should be.
I'm saying that he's upset because he's not, that Renly does what he does. I know what you're going to say is that, you know, the reason he's at Dragonstone for Robert Baratheon is because he's next up, right? So like he's kind of that, like, air quote, even though he has children and stuff, they're not of age. Okay.
Right.
Once Joffrey Baratheon becomes of age, he would have been sent maybe to Dragonstone or something, or he then becomes prince of whatever.
Right.
You know, that's sort of the thing. But
yeah. Yeah, so it says, after Robert Baratheon overthrew the Targaryens in Robert's Rebellion, he gave the castle to his brother Stannis, creating House Baratheon of Dragonstone. So obviously, you know, just one other thing I just really kind of want to talk about a little bit here is obviously the big table on Dragonstone that we see a lot in the show and in the books. It is a carving of Westeros. And, you know, it's a big map table that you always see Stannis standing at, and then later Daenerys standing at as they're kind of planning their attacks and things like that. It's really cool. I think the way they portray it in the show, I think, is really cool. It's certainly one of the coolest set pieces in the show.
Right. And can we talk just quickly about, like, the way that that's created and how important it is? Because, like, Aegon with his dragons is the one mapping out the freaking kingdom, and before his conquest and stuff, like, remember, like, the Targaryens were there for quite a while and lived peacefully. This is that westernmost outpost, and so it's just interesting how, you know, like, he was able to kind of like survey the land, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it is kind of a small island, you know, obviously. But, you know, a lot of important people hold that castle. Maegor the Cruel stays there. You know, Aegon the Second stays there at some point. Rhaegar lives there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's actually where Daenerys is born. Daenerys is born on Dragonstone when her mother is sent there, you know, before the sack of King's Landing.
Yeah. Yeah. Sir Willem Dary, right? And he gets kind of like it's almost like Stannis is scolded for letting him, you know, them get away to Dragonstone. Remember that's a piece in this chapter. How did they get there? So, yeah, interesting. So,
yeah, super cool. All right, man. Well, we ready to dive into the chapter here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's do it.
So I did a big, huge Game of Thrones recap on Patreon for that kind of show watchers tier. And since, you know, the last chapter was a Daenerys chapter, you know, obviously Daenerys the steps in the fire with Khal Drogo, the dragons wake up, and we see that red comet. But, you know, so we'll continue kind of our standard recap next week of the chapter before. But so this is the first one.
Yeah.
So summary. Maester Cressen broods on the omens all around him on Dragonstone. When news arrives that the Stormlands will not support Stannis Baratheon's quest for the Iron Throne, Cressen comes into conflict with Queen Selyse and the Red Priestess Melisandre over what course to take. In a desperate attempt to kill Melisandre, Cressen shares poison wine with her but dies while she remains unaffected.
Man. Yeah. Pretty wild. This is where you really we get this dramatic intro to Melisandre. Man, I mean, she's something else, and it's just like the powers we talked about at the end of Game of Thrones. Like all of this, you know, what's happening with Daenerys and the dragon eggs, the red comet that's showing up. It's all these subtly, but at the same time, in sort of a big way, powers are coming back into the series. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm just going to read some of the summary here of kind of the first little bit of it here. It says, you know, Maester Cressen watches from his balcony as the red comet spreads across the dawn over Dragonstone. Like a wound in the sky, the feeble 80-year-old chides himself for considering it an omen, yet he has never seen a comet so bright nor of that color. It is even visible during the day now. At the same time, hot steam has begun to issue from vents beneath the Dragonmont volcano, and a white raven has arrived from the Citadel, declaring the end of the longest summer in living memory. 10 years, 2 turns, and 16 days. Too many omens to deny. It is enough to make any man believe in omens, but the old maester cannot decide what they might mean. And yeah, the red comet that ends the first book, you know, we talk about it. It's a big deal because everyone sees it, and a lot of people take it for a different meaning. Mm-hmm. You know, Daenerys sees it, and then you know, that's she wakes the dragons. You know, Stannis sees it, thinking it makes him king. Joffrey sees it, thinking it makes him king. You know, Osha's telling Bran the red comet only means one thing: dragons.
Right.
It also comes at the same time that Jon Snow is kind of starting to begin his real journey as a man of the Night's Watch, riding into the true north.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, I mean, there's a lot of big events happening at the turn of this red comet.
Yeah, I mean, Maester Cressen kind of believes that it's like it's blood and murder or death or whatever. Like he thinks it's a foul omen, and so you watch the people who think it's a good omen, and those who think it's bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just interesting. Old Nan, as you say, thinking it's dragons. Well, that's cool. If it's dragons, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? You know, it depends on who you are and what you're hoping for. There are still, you know, remember Viserys Targaryen was always led to believe that there are still people who were secretly kind of, I don't know, giving praise or wishing that the dragon would come back and that the Targaryens would reign again and stuff. So just really kind of where do your loyalties lie and stuff. And then if you're Dany, yeah, this is a good omen. There's also the connection with the dragon eggs being born, for crying out loud. So. It's a lot, and it's something that goes on for several chapters here into A Clash of Kings. It's referenced and mentioned, right? It's not just here. It's going to be
right.
Yeah, something that we'll talk about over and over again. Yeah. So,
a character that we're immediately kind of we meet right off the bat here, and you know, again, the tone of this book at least it feels different. You know, everything it. I think the choice of starting it here by, you know, by Gurr is such a great idea because we're introduced to our new set of characters. Everything seems a little more serious. You know, obviously there's more of an introduction of magic, which is a big deal. You know, that's the way the first book starts with the prologue and the White Walkers. Then we don't see the White Walkers again, we hear tales of them and stuff like that. So there was always that looming winter is coming, winter is coming, winter is coming. And so now we see this this idea. So the last chapter really starts with ice. This chapter starts with fire. And I think that's a really cool way to do it. Whether mm-hmm. that was his intention when he was originally writing it or not.
Good point.
I just think it's super cool. But so it starts here, and a character we immediately kind of meet is Patchface. He says, you know, with right here. When Pylos returned, the girl came with him, shy as ever. Behind her, which is Shireen. Behind her, shuffling and hopping in that queer sideways walk of his, came her fool. On his head was a mock helm fashioned from an old tin bucket, with a rack of deer antlers strapped to the crown and hung with cowbells. With his every lurching step, the bells rang, each with a different voice, cling-a-dang, bong, you know, ring, ring, clong, clong. "Who comes to see us so early, Pylos?" Crescent said. "It's me and Patches, Maester." Guileless blue eyes blinked at him. You know, it's interesting that they make such a big deal about his eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, hers is not a pretty face. You know, they talk about how, you know, she has some disfigurement, which is the grayscale.
Yeah.
But then this is where we start to get a little bit about Patchface, man. You know, you and I are going to be doing later a big kind of Patreon episode, so I don't want to spend a ton of time here on him. But there is a lot of mystery surrounding him. You know, and then he talks about you know, the fool turned and patched his piebald head to watch Pylos climb up the steps to the rookery. His bells rang with motion. "Under the sea, the birds have scales for feathers," he sang. You know, "Oh, I know, oh, oh, oh," which he says a lot, you know, like, yeah, and I just hear Roy Dotrice's voice, you know, like singing as he does. Yeah. I mean, but Patchface is kind of a very interesting character.
Yeah, well, let me just get cut right to the point, and then we won't go a whole lot into this, but, like, the question with Patchface is he, when he speaks, is he speaking, you know, kind of, like, is he a prophet, in a sense? Is it prophetic? Is what he's saying mm-hmm. going to come true, or and how does he know things? It's too eerie, like, what he says and how much it matches with what's going on around the realm. So... Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, and it's just it's nuts, and he's a slave from Valentis, right? So he went over when Lord Stefan goes across the way to find a bride for Rhaegar.
He comes back with him, and also think about the fact that when he comes back, the ship crashes, and you know, Robert Baratheon's standing there. I think him and Stannis are standing there, and they watch the ship crash, and he dies. But the only person to survive is Patchface.
Right, and it's crazy that how you know he's the one who they went to. How, what's the irony in that? Right, that they went to go find a bride for Rhaegar. They don't find one, but hey, they wrote back and they find this really cool gesture. This maybe even could have been a bard spoke and sang in four or five different languages. They say they were just kind of they actually mm-hmm. think very highly of him, and then the fact that this is the only person who makes it. Like, no one else makes it, really? So, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Patchface says things, "It's always summer under the sea." You know, that's right. That's some other... Under the sea, it snows up, and the rain is as dry as bone. I know, oh, oh, oh. You know, and he's...
Okay.
And so anyway, yeah, I don't want to spoil too much of our thing, but...
One more thing. Go ahead. Well, just one more thing. So they
mention
here in the prologue, and since they mention in this chapter, we'll talk about it. Because there's so much more with Patchface going forward. But in this chapter, when they find him, they say he's as nimble as a monkey. He's witty. He can juggle. He does riddles. And he does magic. All right? That's what they say. That's what they say. You know, he can sing with this pretty voice in four tongues. So they're hoping to bring him back home, and they're very delighted with this, you know, with Patchface, and hoping that he's going to bring basically, you know, teach Stannis how to smile and you know, just be this bright light in court there for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that doesn't
is happen. He another? I think so.
Yeah, maybe.
Know? I mean, yeah.
Maybe. He does magic. That's what they say.
Well, it's the blue eyes is what a lot of people think. That's where they have that. The fact that they talk about his guileless blue eyes.
They talk about his pale, cold skin, too.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, some lines. So he, as we progress a couple pages here, he's talking about, you know, he's singing a song and he sings, "The shadows come to dance, my lord, dance, my lord, dance, my lord. The shadows come to stay, my lord, stay, my lord, stay, my lord." They say he sings that all the time. Now, interesting. Think about this, right? Now that we've had from season 8, they expanded Jenny's song, "The shadows come to dance." Mm-hmm. You know, they talk about high in the halls of the kings who are lost, Jenny dances with her ghosts. Well, a shadow and a ghost. I mean, I'm just saying.
Jay-Z cow.
Is there a connection?
Yes, probably. Yes.
That's so just cool. Very similar. It's just very, very kind of similar.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, what's crazy, too, when they pull Patchface up from they find him on the beach. When they grab him by the ankle and they start to pull him along, they think he's a corpse. They're going to throw him away with everybody else. But then he comes through. He kind of makes a couple. It's not like they, you know, what's dead may never die. Like they I don't know. Like they did nothing to him to bring him back. Essentially, as far as we know, the only thing they talk about is Maester Cressen kind of refusing to give him, you know, milk or medicine to keep him. To make him to help him go to sleep essentially forever to die. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. I mean, right here, a little bit after that, it starts to talk about it. It says, you know, a sudden Cressen to remember that letter. None of us had ever taught Stannis how to laugh because they thought, you know, we could get Patchface. He's so good that he's a most splendid fool. He'll teach Stannis how to laugh. And so this is obviously his dad thinking about to get Stannis as a young boy, you know, how to laugh. Says the Lord's two-masted galley, Windproud, broke up within sight of his castle. You know, it said it smashed against the rocks and the waters. 100 oarsmen and sailors went down with Lord Stephen Baratheon and his later wife. And for days thereafter, every tide, you know, a fresh crop of swollen corpses would wash up. And it says the boy washed up on the third day.
Yeah. Yep. Crazy. I mean, he also washes up without any clothes. He's tatted up like crazy. By the way, one thing you need to know about Patchface is it's not paint. He's actually tattooed, you know,
with
that green and red kind of coloring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says you know, the witty, clever lad that Lord Stephen had written of never reached Storm's End, but the boy they found was someone else. Broken in body and mind, hardly capable of speech, much less of wit. Yet his fool's face left no doubt of who he was. It was in the fashion of the free city of Volantis to tattoo the faces of slaves and servant from neck to the scalp, you know, so people knew exactly who he was. Yeah, they say the wretch is mad and in pain and of no use to anyone, least of all himself.
Right. And that's where they're basically wanting to kind of, like, he's clearly going to be in misery. He's lost it. He's whatever. Let's just give him mercy.
And then
mercy. Yeah.
Right here, when he says the shadows come to dance, the white raven, you know, dance, my lord, the white raven shrieks, Lord. So that goes into, you know, possibly is there a connection there? We hear Commander Mormont's raven, right, which we believe has some connection to Blood Raven when it's by John and it says king, you know, stuff. That kind of thing. So it's just interesting to see another connection here of a different raven with Patchface.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you know, I mean, Cressen kind of says when he's explaining to Shireen just that, like, these ravens can be taught certain words and he may sing a song one day and not ever come back to it or remember it. Mm-hmm. But that actually, when they talked about how this raven could maybe pick up a line of a song or sing something or even.
Right.
Or maybe that was, well, just even in what it would say and not remember it like the next day or go on to something else. It just doesn't seem to fit. I'm sort of like, I don't know. Like maybe that's someone speaking through the raven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so, why it doesn't remember it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, okay, after that, Shireen and Patchface kind of leave in this. And then we're introduced to one of the best, a fan favorite. Obviously a boss, a no slouch boss of a character, Sir Davos Seaworth.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. This is great. I mean, It's cool too because Davos is a lot like Stannis in that they don't really mince words or sugarcoat things or beat around the bush. They're pretty straight to the straight to the point and just real blunt, I guess. And Crescent kind of notes that about both of them, and that's maybe also why Davos is well liked by the king. I'll call him King Stannis. All right.
Well, he is. Yeah.
So, right. So, but yeah, I think this is awesome. Davos is great. And at first you don't see this relation. You see a little bit about just interaction with the stuff with Shireen really develops later on, but this is more just developing him as someone who, had saved House Baratheon and who had saved them at Storm's End. And he's this notorious smuggler, not just notorious in this region, but known throughout the realm, throughout the Seven Kingdoms. Like, he's that well known as a smuggler.
Well, think about this. This is interesting too. It talks about Davos a little bit here and who he is. Says Davos was a slight man. He is low birth, written plain upon a common face, a well-worn green cloak stained by salt and spray and faded from the sun, draped on his thin shoulders. Around his neck, he has a patch of leather, his small beard was well peppered and gray. He wore a leather glove on his maimed left hand. Says, when did you return? He says, in the black of morning, my favorite time. It is said that no one had ever handled a ship by night half so well as Davos shorthand. That's another word for him. And then they talk a little bit about his shorthand and how he got it. We know that he saves Stannis Baratheon, right? He brings them a bunch of onions while they're being sieged, and then that buys them enough time during Robert's Rebellion for Eddard Stark to bring down and put an end to the siege. And Stannis rewards him by giving him some land, but also it says, I'm going to take four of your fingers, because you have been a thief
for years.
So it's like one good deed does not, replace the years and years worth of bad deeds that you've had. And so, and I think Davos isn't really, I generally think he thinks it's fair.
Yeah. He does seem, he basically commanded, he wanted Stannis to do it himself too. Challenged him to say, all right, then the only person who he felt could really pass that type of judgment and it be fair would be Stannis. Imagine if somebody else who was caught up in all sorts of other sins of the seven or people who had like Stannis has a pretty solid, he's a gruff guy, but he's got a pretty solid reputation. You could say he's distant from his daughter or his wife or whatever, but for the most part, he does what he's supposed to do. So it's like, if anybody's going to pass judgment on me, let it be this guy and let him do it himself. And there's just a lot of respect between those two that was gained there. And I think even Davos, the way he does accept the punishment, was said a lot for Stannis. Just in his favor, in Davos's favor. So that's why he grants him his title and he grants him his, pick of land and stuff. And helps his sons out. Helps his sons rise to possible potential knighthood later on and stuff. So... as squires and such,
And so Davos is going to have a meeting with Stannis. And then they talk a little bit about the room, the Great Round Room. They talk a little bit about the table, the painted table that we talked about a little bit during our Maester study. It says it's more than 50 feet long, perhaps half that wide at its widest point, but less than 4 feet across at its narrowest. Aegon, talking about Aegon the Conqueror's having it made. Carpenters had it shaped after the land of Westeros, sawing out each bay and peninsula until the table nowhere ran straight. On its surface, darkened by near 300 years of varnish, were painted the Seven Kingdoms as they had been in Aegon's day. Rivers and mountains, castles and cities, lakes and forests. There was a single chair in the room, carefully positioned in the precise place along Dragonstone that it occupied off the coast of Westeros and raised up to give a good view of the tabletop. Just such great. It's such cool world building there. And it is. It's such a cool table. And again, I think the show did a really, really good job. It's obviously a lot smaller in the show than what it says here. But again, I think it's a very, very cool set piece. I think they did a really good job with that.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Yeah, absolutely. You know, another thing, too, so not only is he doing, like, this world-building thing, but one thing I want to mention before I forget is you have old Maester Cressen, who is climbing the stairs, having trouble, not being summoned. Stannis kind of saying, you're old. Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't really need your counsel. You're ill. Maybe you're losing your wits or whatever. Let him rest, whatever. He does say later on that he's given him great, you know, good service in years past. But you have this sort of like the old way and the new way, or you've got this, like the maesters tend to hold to science and logic or whatever in here. You don't have the numbers, Lord Stannis. You don't have the numbers to do what you want to do.
Right.
But on the other side, it doesn't matter. You know, they're saying to Stannis, it doesn't matter because you are the chosen one. It's like, hold on a second here. Like, have you abandoned, you know, this reason and logic and whatever else? I mean, it's that's sort of where Crescent's coming from. And the crazy thing is his assistant, who we haven't mentioned much, but Pylos, is someone who I think he's 21 or 25, I think it says. Mm-hmm. I think it says, yeah, that he's 25. And he is a little ambitious. I mean, he is the assistant maester. He's waiting for Cressen to kind of die. He's in talking with, you know, Solis, and he's talking to Stannis and everything. So there's that whole dynamic happening here as well. So it's just interesting because he's trying to give good counsel, and he's actually reiterating. Cressen in this point is reiterating what Davos had just said to Stannis. No one likes you. You don't have the numbers. You don't have the support. And Cressen goes up to kind of say that as well. Like, you need to kind of seek out Renly. Seek out Renly. Make peace with one another. And he's known these two boys since their youth, right? I mean, he was been around that whole time. He talks about Renly and how he loved to play games. He loved to play at being something. And now he's playing at being a king with his new rainbow guard.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of this whole dynamic that Cressen is in, trying to help these two younger than him men navigate this time after they've lost their brother and who should be next up. It's just kind of wild, you know. It's just his confrontation here with Melisandre at the end of this is where it's all at. This is the major shift from maesters to nope, we're getting caught up in religion and magic and powers and you're destined to be the chosen one or the king, all that kind of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. After that, where do we kind of go? This is where what's her name? Stannis starts complaining a little bit about, you know, Dragonstone and Storm's End, right?
Yeah, he starts. Yeah, right. He's complaining right about why he got Dragonstone and the whole business there and just.
Yeah, what you and I are talking about a little bit when we're talking about that is he says, you know, I never asked for Dragonstone. I never wanted it. I took it because Robert's enemies were here, you know, because this is where he started to make his plans. Right. Talking about why he's upset with Renly and all of this stuff. He says, you know, Robert did you injustice, Maester Cressen replied carefully. Yet he had his sound reasons. Dragonstone had long been the seat of House Targaryen. He needed a man's strength to rule here, and Renly was a child. You know, he says he's a child still. But again, I think actually, you know, as we were talking before, it's the heir apparent. Stannis is the heir apparent. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's such a small island and you don't really make a lot of money because there's not a lot of people there, not nearly as much as you would have in Storm's End. But I think in terms of a seat of power, I mean, when we look back, we think, ooh, you know, Rhaegar is on Dragonstone, right? As mm-hmm. if it's, we view it almost as like, I think historically, you know, as an equal. But of course, you know, we have to think about when Ger was writing this and stuff like that. But to me, it's like, you know, Dragonstone is a really big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. And that is sort of, I think it's even mentioned too. Like they mentioned some point even prior to this that being the Lord of Dragonstone meant that you were kind of next up. It was almost implied that it was that title. It held that prestige or whatever. So it's something that is maybe a little bit lost to Stannis just because it's not what he wanted. But there was a time when Robert had just taken the throne, right? And he had just taken the throne. He didn't have any children. He had no one else. Next up is his next is Stannis. If he were to fall, it goes to his brother, you know. And then his kids, as we said, hadn't even reached that age of, I don't know, maturity or whatever. Like they hadn't become men yet, so he's still there kind of ruling, and he's on his council and stuff. He goes on to kind of say it's even more than just the fact that he has Dragonstone. It's that he wasn't given the same love. He wasn't treated like a brother, like the way Eddard Stark was. You know, he just never got that same feeling, that same, I don't know, admiration or whatever. So, I mean, he goes on to mention, right, that when Robert Arryn falls, when he is killed, that instead of coming to him and offering him the hand of the king, he goes north to his old friend, who he loved like a brother more than any, and he said, and I was his brother. And the crazy thing is, too, that Stannis almost like loses sort of like, well, what did Renly think in all of this, too? You know what I mean? It's like they're all kind of disconnected in a sense in this weird way. And I almost wonder if that's something to do with like the fostering that took place. You know, Robert Baratheon going to foster somewhere else in the area. And so being away and Stannis not having an older brother, but then in a sense being the older brother to Renly, and it's just sort of a weird dynamic that Crescent actually knows a lot about. And commentates on. So,
well, he also gets sick here too when he's talking about Robb Stark, and he talks about, you know, why should I? They talk about, you know, Robb is raising a banner. Should we accept him? And he says, you know, he's a green boy, another false king. Am I to accept a broken realm? He says, surely half a kingdom is better than none. He says, you know, and if you help the boy avenge his father's murder, you know, he says, why should I avenge Stark? You know, he was nothing to me. Robert loved him. You know, as you said, you know, he says, I held Storm's End while Mace Tyrell, you know, feasted within sight of my walls. Did Robert thank me? No, he thinks Stark. While we were down in the rats, you know, while we were down to rats and radishes. Mm-hmm. He says, I built a fleet for Robert's command. He took Dragonstone in his name. Did he take my hand and say, well done, brother? He says, no, he blamed me for letting William Derry steal away Viserys as the babe, as if I could have stopped it. He says, he sat on his council for years, helping Jon Arryn rule, and Robert drank and whored, but when John died, did my brother name me his hand? No, he went galloping off to his dear friend Stark.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of things. It's just sort of like a lot of the fault is in Robert, really. I mean, I understand
it
that
is.
Like Stannis doesn't, I don't know. He, in a way he still does honor his brother to some degree and help him or whatever, but it's sort of like, you know, Stannis knows what he was up against when he was, when he was in trouble, and the only person who could help him was the Young Knight, and he knows what that was like and what he had to go through. Robert doesn't, you know, I mean, he wasn't in the same circumstances, but yet, and so it's almost like, it's just tough, because how can you say to Stannis, like, well, what the heck, why, you know, what were you doing, just sitting down there? I mean, we had to come save you and had to come, you know, root the Tyrells out. It's like, well, you weren't here. I mean, he's also in a really, like, Storm's End is in a position that, like, you were north of this with everybody who was pissed off riding south. When you look at Robert's Rebellion and where all this was taking place, I mean, where was the aid that they needed at Storm's End? It's a wonder that Stannis kept it, that he was able to kind of, you know, do what he did there. And it's because of the Young Knight that actually they show up and there's still people alive. There's still a garrison fighting on. So,
Yeah, I mean, the Robert's Rebellion in general, I mean, you can look at it. It's kind of a wonder that they won, you know, really, especially with how long it takes Eddard Stark to really bring troops down and stuff like this. I mean, they've got Robert on the run. It's just, you know, he slips away. And then obviously it's not really like House Lannister not being involved, the Dornishmen not really super also being involved. It's really just the Crownlands and the Reach fighting against, you know, the Riverlands and kind of the Vale and the Stormlands until the North joins. Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. It really, if you look at it, I mean, they kind of, I think, should have won.
Yeah. 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 They could probably should have. Yeah. So now we get back into this bit here though, where Maester Crescent is kind of saying, okay, so Davos has already told you that you're not going to be able to rally as many bannermen as you thought. And, I mean, even his wife, Selyse Florent, right, kind of says, well, you have an army and, you know, her house will kind of answer the call, and that's only like 3,000 men or something.
Right.
And he's talking about maybe an alliance, like maybe we send Shireen and we make an alliance with Robert Arryn's. Yeah, with the Vale. And he's just like, no, I mean, he turns all this down. And the person, like
that's a really good idea, though. He totally should have done that.
Well, there's a lot of good things. I think like Mr. Crescent's doing all the traditional sort of like build your alliances, do this, do that. But it, like in the end, he chooses to believe in a Shadowbinder, you know, and these,
right.
and these powers.
Just weird.
Yeah. The one true God. I mean, it's crazy. It just shows you how persuasive she was. And Melisandre,
right,
really,
yeah.
she doesn't
God,
start with the king.
She says, not gods. You know, the Red right. Woman had won her heart and soul, turning her from the gods of the Seven Kingdoms, both old and new, to worship the one they called the Lord of Light.
Right. Yep. And it, like working on the wife first, you know, working on Selyse before she works on Stannis was key, actually. Pretty mm-hmm. pretty solid on her part. So, yeah. It's just crazy. Now, to kind of move along, right? I mean, they eventually, they're going to have, he's going to have a dinner with his mm-hmm. bannermen. Mm-hmm. He's going to have them over later on. There's a little bit more here, though. Gosh, there's actually one of the longer prologues.
It's really long. Yeah, there's a lot to it. And again, a lot of it's world building. You know, his chambers seem dim and gloomy, and I think it's good. They're really kind of building up Dragonstone because it's now going to be a really important, you know, an important thing. So, you know, he's talking about the chain around his throat. As Maester Cressen felt very heavy. He touched one of the crystals lightly with the tip of his finger. Such a small thing to hold the power of life and death.
Oh yeah. So right. So after they've had their little argument, Cressen's realizing that. They talk of killing Renly. They talk of mm-hmm. actually killing Renly, and he's just sort of like horror struck by this idea. At that point, he's just sort of like, no. I've got to do something. I have to do something.
Yeah, Melisandre madness must not be allowed to spread beyond Dragonstone.
Mm-hmm.
Melisandre of Ashai, sorceress, shadowbinder, and priestess to R'hllor, the Lord of Light, the Heart of Fire, the God of Flame and Shadow.
Man, yeah, that's some titles, right? For sure.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just speaking madness. It's just some crazy stuff that just is really rocking the boat here, and. Cressen decides that he doesn't have much time left, I think, is another thing he kind of thinks.
Right.
What can he do here in the end? Pylos is already there to replace him because he's old. He can barely walk up and down the steps. So you have to remember, he is an extremely old man who has a lot of health mm-hmm. issues. And yeah. his mind
and
is still sound, though.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
His mind
and
is still sound.
It's interesting here. He's thinking about all of these different things he could possibly do. You know, he's thinking about poisons and stuff like that. He talks about the faceless men, which is, you know, again, interesting to hear about them. The assassins. I think we heard about them once, right? Yeah, just
yep.
once. So now we hear about them again, kind of like Mance Rayder. You know, we heard about Mance Rayder a little bit mm-hmm. in the last book, and now this is the second time I think we've heard about the faceless men. Yeah. He says he no longer called the Ashai name for the leaf or the Lysine poisoners in the crystal. In the Citadel, it was simply called the Strangler. Dissolved in wine, it would make the muscles of a man's throat clench tighter than any fist, shutting off his windpipe. They said a victim's face turned as purple as the little crystal seed from which the death was grown. But so, too, did the man choking on a morsel of food. So that's interesting that we hear about this here because it obviously mm-hmm. comes yeah. back to play later.
Right. Right, it does, and it's sort of he's decided in his mind here that he is not to deal with this. He needs to kill Melisandre, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't think she's really shown or demonstrated like any of her true power or whatever. It's he's still at this point. I think had he have seen some of what Melisandre could do, he never would have tried this. But it's early on, and he's short on time, so this is something he thinks he can do because. Her words are, he can already see the claws or the grip that she has on Selyse and just what's happening there. And it's sort of like, and he can also see it affecting Stannis. I mean, for crying out loud, at least Stannis does say earlier on when they say, Stannis asks the question, how many swords will the Lord of Light put in my hand? And then his wife promised all you need, the swords of Storm's End and of Highgarden for a start, and all, their Lord Bannerman. It's just kind of crazy. Like, all of them? Seriously? And then he goes, Davos would tell you different. Those swords are sworn to Renly. And, you know, but if Renly should die, you know, here we go. So she's talking about what Melisandre has seen in her flames. She's fully converted. And Cressen's seeing how persuasive they are and stuff. It's just, it's wild. I mean, Davos is more practical. He has pity on Cressen later on as well, too. Mm-hmm. So you can see that these two have a similar kind of belief system or outlook on this, and the way they approach how they're going to help Stannis is very different from how Melisandre and his wife want to help him.
Right. So. And he starts to see his power slipping, too. Right. You know, it's like where it says when he awoke, it was full of dark. His bedchamber was black. Every joint in his body ached. You know, he realizes, you know, that there's something going on. He says, they did not summon me. Mm-hmm. He always summoned me. Yep. Yeah. And yes, this is where he realizes, yeah, well, he's got to hurry. He's got to get down there and see what's going on.
And I say this is the one part where you're gonna hate me for this, but I actually kind of say shame on Stannis for the way that he at least says one good thing about Maester Cressen when he shows up here to this party, but the way he's treated is just ridiculous. It's like, man, this is a respected, you know, Maester who's been here for years, and they want to just call him they make him out to be a jester, they make him out to be a fool,
right.
They compare him to Patchface. It's just like, mm-hmm. What the heck?
And Patchface is there.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. So.
Yeah. He's singing the song, "The Shadows Come to Stay, My Lord. Stay, My Lord. Stay, My Lord." Do you think there's a. Yeah, I think there's something.
No, the shadows are there, that's for sure. The
there's
shadow binder is there.
Yeah,
she
there's
has bound
there's
those shadows. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, but anyway, so Cressen's climbing those stairs. Poor guy, you know, hobbled into the gateway, into the dining hall there. He made his way towards the raised platform where the lords sat with the king. He had to step wide around Patchface. Let's see. As he hopped from one leg to another, Patchface lurched into Cressen, knocking his cane out from under him. They went mm-hmm. crashing down together amidst the rushes in a tangle of arms and legs. So this is no doubt it was a comical sight. You know, it's just Patchface being, they just run into each other, whatever.
Right.
Trying to make the best of it, the maester smiled feebly and struggled to rise, but his hip was in such pain that for a moment he was half afraid that he had broken it all over again. He felt strong hands grasp him under the arms and lift him back to his feet. "Thank you, sir," he murmured, turning to see which knight had come to his aid. "Maester," said Lady Melisandre, her deep voice flavored with the music of the Jade Sea, "you ought to take more care." So those strong mm-hmm. hands and that person lifting him up that felt as strong as a knight was Melisandre.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then he talks about her appearance a little bit. You know, it says around her throat was the red gold choker tighter than any maester's chain, ornamented with a single great ruby. Her hair was not the orange or strawberry of common red hair, but a deeper, burned copper that shone in the light of the torches. Even her eyes were red, her skin smooth as white. She talks about she's slender, taller than most knights. It says men's eyes that once found her did not quickly look away, not even a maester's eyes. Many called her beautiful. She was not beautiful. She was red, terrible, and red. says, I thank you, my lady. A man your age must look where he steps, Melisandre courteously. The night is dark and full of terrors. Boom, there it is. And we'll obviously be hearing that a lot more.
Yep. Yeah. And this is, he kind of has a battle of words with her a little bit, just kind of going back and forth. Only the children fear the dark. Even as he said the words, he heard Patchface take up his song again. "The shadows come to dance, my lord, dance, my lord, dance, my lord."
Yeah, wow.
Right? I mean, right as he says that, like, he's talking about how the shadows have come and they're here to stay. Patchface knows. Oh, he knows, right? I mean...
Mm-hmm.
Trust old Patchface to confirm. He's the old Nan, I guess, of this region.
Right. Yeah. So then she kind of makes fun of him. She hands him, like, Patchface's crown falls down and she picks it up. She says, you know, crown to match your chain. People start laughing. He says, I need no crown but the truth.
Yeah.
He tells her, removing the fool's helm from his head. She says, there are truths in this world that are not taught at Old Town. Which is kind of true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is where he talks to Stannis to a little bit. He says, "You did not wake me." Or, no, he's just saying, the old man could only stop and stare. Maester Pylos, he said at last, "you did not wake me. His grace commanded me to let you rest. He told me you were not needed here." Ooh.
Gee, many Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And then they kind of go over just everybody who's there. Lord Kel'Thagar, Lord Valerion.
Lord Sunglass.
Right. Right. Axel Florent is there as well. So, yeah. Just gonna go in. Oh, whoa. I forgot this guy was there. Salador San. Is he there?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Yeah.
The Lycene captain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's a big deal. We'll talk more about him later. Davos is there dressed simply in brown. Right? Brown and green. Well,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where he found Pity. I mean, that's the only person who he really looked at, and kind of Davos feels bad for the old man. And this is sort of this sucks. He just ran into Patchface.
Right.
He's getting, you know, talked to this way by Melisandre. It's disrespectful. You don't talk to a maester like this. I mean, this is ridiculous. So, but anyways, then he hears Lord Stannis' voice saying, "You are too ill and too confused to be used to me, old man. Pylos will counsel me henceforth. Already he works with the ravens, since you can no longer climb to the rookery. I will not have you kill yourself in my service." You know, and he doesn't, again, he just is super blunt. He has no way of, I don't know, he knows the courtesies, but he's not like, I don't know, he just doesn't. Stannis says what he's thinking. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he... You know, this is a little bit after that is when, he realizes he's sitting too far away from her. He's like, I must get closer here if I am to get the Strangler into her cup yet. How? Mm-hmm. And then Patchface is kind of dancing around, he's singing a song. You know, he's under the sea. We eat fish and the fish eat us. And Davos, it's just like, whatever. Yeah. You know, I was like, all right,
Patchface.
All right, Patchface. Yeah. where is it? It's just a little bit. Stannis is still talking, you know, to Selyse, and he's, you know, the Starks seek to steal half my kingdom. Yet even if the Lannisters have stolen my throne, they are all usurpers and they are all my enemies. You know, I've lost him. Crescent thought, and so, you know, this is where it's more of kind of his inner monologue. It's kind of like all of these things are just kind of happening, and he's like seeing it all unfold really, you know, really, really quickly. And so he's just trying to. I think it's the way it's told. It's really good because it seems kind of chaotic, and so he's like, I've got to do this now. I've got to make my move.
Yeah, it's actually sort of you feel like Crescent a little bit, because it's him, right? We're he's thinking about how things are bouncing, things are outside. He's been asleep. He woke up. He's confused. He's not confused, but he's behind. He feels like he's a step behind, and he's trying to do something here, and he's rushing, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's also, I wanted to mention, he's seated next to Davos, because Davos was the only one who, you know, he's like, hey, I have a seat here for you, because he's looking around. No one will give him a freaking seat. Come on,
right,
man. It's an old man sitting there, and Davos is like, here, come over here. I've got a seat for you. It just makes you like Davos that much more.
It's great. And so then he does. He says, you've gone too far, woman. You know, Lord Santa says he's an old man and he served me well, you know? And so, hey, it's like, you know.
Yeah, that's a redeeming. Yeah, right.
That's a little redeeming. He says, in his mind, he said, I will serve you to the last, my sweet lord, my poor lonely son, Crescent thought. For suddenly he saw the way. Sir Davos's cup was before him, still half full of sour red. He found a hard flake of crystal in his sleeve, held it tight between his thumb and forefinger as he reached for the cup. Smooth motions, deft, I must not fumble now. So he gets it in there. He says, maybe I have been a fool, Lady Melisandre. Will you share a cup of wine with me? A cup in honor of your God, your Lord of Light, a cup to toast his power. And, you know, she says, and she kind of studies him, if you wish. He could feel everyone watching. Davos clutched at him unless he left his bench, catching his sleeve with his fingers, and Lord Stannis's, had shortened. He said, what are you doing? So Stannis, or I think Davos realizes,
knows.
Hey, something's up. Something's up.
He saw him do it. For sure, yeah.
He says, you know, a thing that must be done for the sake of the realm and, you know, the soul of my lord. He shook off Davos's hand, spilling a drop of wine on the rushes. She met him beneath the high table with every man's eye upon them, but Crescent saw only her red silk, red eyes, and the ruby red at her throat. His skin felt hot, feverish. It's not too late to spill the wine, maester.
She gives him that.
No. She gives him the option. Yeah, no, he whispered hoarsely. No, as you will. Melisandre of Ashai took the cup from his hands and drank long and deep. So, I mean, you know, she see in the show, I think it's the other way around. I think he takes a sip first.
Okay.
And then so he's I'm gonna have to pull it up. But I'm pretty sure that he takes a sip first. And so it's like he's like being poisoned as he watches her drink the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm gonna pull it up here.
Yeah, it's just I think it has a little bit more power though. I mean, just that like she drinks it first, and I don't know. I guess you could go either way. It's sort of like if he's really committed to his plan, he's going to drink first to maybe show her that there's nothing to fear here, and then hands it to her while he kind of steadies himself to watch her mm-hmm. drink. You know what I'm saying? I think you go either way, or you give it to Melisandre, who knows there's poison, and says, "Okay, I'll go ahead and drink it anyways." And
he does drink first.
Yeah, so I think either way, it depends on who you want to kind of put in maybe a more favorable light, I think is why you would make that choice, right? Because if Crescent drinks it first, he's committed.
Right.
He's absolutely like, I'm done. This is my last drink, you know? So if that's what they do in the show, that's cool.
Yeah, and in the show, I mean, I have the scene pulled up here, and he's starting to, like, stammer and fall down. Like, I think, you know, blood is starting to even, like, come out of his nose. So he's like already poisoned and dying, and then he just watches her drink the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
as she's like staring right into his eyes. It's pretty cool. I mean, either way,
it's awesome.
It's awesome. Yeah.
In a weird way. Yeah. It's just showing Melisandre's strength, and I think that's really why. Yeah.
Right.
She offers it back to him. She says, "And now you." His hands were shaking. Yeah. Made himself strong. A maester of the Citadel must not be afraid. The wine was sour on his tongue. He let the empty cup drop from his fingers and shatter on the floor. "He does have power here, my lord," the woman said. "The fire mm-hmm. cleanses." At her throat, the ruby shimmered redly. Mm-hmm. Crescent tried to reply, but his words caught in his throat. His cough became a terrible thick whistle as he strained to suck in air. Iron fingers tightened around his neck. As he sank to his knees, still he shook his head, denying her power, denying her magic, denying her god. And the cowbells pealed in their antlers, singing, "Fool, fool, fool," while the red woman looked down on him in pity, the candle flames dancing in her red, red eyes.
Yeah.
It's just, wow. I mean, it's building this Melisandre. Oh,
right.
She's a big deal. Like,
you're like, whoa, this is different.
It didn't affect her at all. And she drank first and drank most of it. So,
yeah. And that's the thing. Again, this is why, you know, we kept saying for a lot of people, it's like, man, the second book things change. It gets magic is way more prevalent, like immediately right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's cool. It is one of the better sequels. I mean, I love Game of Thrones, but this book is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It takes everything that was great in the first book and just, I don't know, makes it better, makes it bigger, as you said, bolder. Mm-hmm. And he really goes for it, so everything grows.
Yep. But, perfect. Man, what a great, the prologue and then we get epilogue chapters and some, you know, we don't get an epilogue chapter in the first book, but man, they're kind of cool because you just get them from different people's perspectives. So it's really, really, really cool. So, all right. Well, I think, we have a raven, Sir Ezra.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah. So we have a raven here. This was a kind of a fitting one from, this is Craig from the Wall, a loyal listener. He calls himself, and I believe so. "Dear sirs, I write to you now from the northeast corner of Westeros, the chilly town of Eastwatch by the sea at the end of the wall," and then in parentheses, Newcastle, England. Yeah. "I must take this time to applaud you both for the great work you have done with your podcast. The first season of BTK has been such an enjoyable listen through your book analysis, show hype, and overall theorizing. It's been totally awesome. I've been listening for a good number of months now, way before season 8 started, and must say I feel a total fraud and a thief for not contributing via Patreon." Don't feel that at all, because...
Right, yeah.
Here he is, Cindy. This literally brightened my day when we saw this. And I was like, I wanted this to be one of the ravens that we use to kind of open this new season, because mm-hmm. there are so many ways. One of the things we'll say right now, we're super close to 1,000 members in the Facebook group.
Yeah.
And our captains of the guard in there do a great job. and just everybody sharing theories and sharing news. We sometimes get news just because you guys share it.
Post
and we
it.
See it and we're like,
that's
yeah.
where, hey, that's where I first saw the news about the new prequels in the in the Facebook group.
Which is great, which is great. So that's all those different ways that you can contribute, writing a review, all that kind of stuff. So never feel bad there. Never, never, never. Mm-hmm. That said, I love the fact that you guys do create such awesome free content as it keeps the great entertainment flowing for us tight-fisted, deep-pocketed, short-armed northerners. So let's see. However, should one of you declare yourselves in the War of the Five Kings and aim for the Iron Throne, I may pledge my firm allegiance and open up the family coffers.
Hey, man. Hey, that's
hysterical. In all seriousness, this Raven is just to say well done on the first season and keep up the incredible work. Loved the read through and the Raven's Nest. Such fun listening to all the different views and opinions. Can't wait for season two and really, really cannot wait for Wheel of Time, the series
that's coming too. Yep.
So again, a loyal listener, Craig from the Wall. So shout out to him. Thank you very much for sending that Raven. It really, it was good. It's just good to kind of hear that, get some feedback and everything. And we really do want this to be like a bigger, better season. We're hoping to do
it's
some fun
be.
Stuff. It is, and I like one of the things we have planned. I mean, for example, in my Maester's studies, you know, when we do the Maester's study. If we have a squire, anybody who wants to join at the squire, you can come on and we will kind of like pre-record something with our squires and boom, post it in there. So, you know, fun things like that we're trying to make a little bit better. We're going to have more. Once we finish up this month, we'll be doing the Harrenhal series, the final one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Four?
Yeah, part four. Yeah, part four.
So we'll finish up Harrenhal and then from there we're going to outline once we get to, you know, 2020, so that'll get us through November. We'll do some fun stuff in December. You know, we like to pull crazy, crazy, crazy theories and do some of that on Patreon maybe in December. And then 2020, we're going to come out with a new outline for our Patreon series so you guys kind of know what's coming up. And if you're in there, we'd love to get feedback on what you'd like to hear about. Are there theories or characters or a series you'd like us to do? Whatever it may be. I think we're open to all of that. It kind of takes me back to Follow-Up Friday when we were all over the freaking series.
We
My
were,
God.
Man. Yeah.
Woo. Talk about Literally. Growing.
Yeah, we'd be like, all right, we're at the Wall. Now we're over in Essos. Now we're in, whoa,
right.
man. It's like, yeah.
It was great, but it was crazy. Right. It was crazy. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So,
yeah, thank you. And he says, I'll try to get a photo of me on the real Wall and add it to the Facebook group. That'd be Hadrian, whichever one,
yep.
the Wall, yep, there in England. So, yeah, I'd be great. Sweet. Okay, so move on over here to Man the Wall. I do have we're also on Ko-fi. I think it's Ko-fi, right? It's like another kind of thing where you can just people who just want to like if you want to pledge like a one time thing. It's kind of cool. Emerson Daup gave us bought Sir Ezra and I a Ko-fi. I guess Ko-fi over there.
You know how much I love my coffee and my cold brew.
It's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, hey, when we added the extra, so we added some extra titles, obviously, at the beginning of the season. We're like, you know, we need to expand some titles. So obviously, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be like, well, I need to expand my titles. That's right. We're in season two, man. You know, what battles have you fought in your life? What have you done? Expand it out there. Yeah, but one of the ones we were thinking of for, because I went in and I just put them in. And then Sir Ezra and I were like, he was like, well, I need some. So we're trying to come up with stuff. I was like, I don't know, man, you drink a lot of cold brew. I was like, captain of the cold brew or, you know, something like that. I was really trying to get him to, you know, say, Sir Ezra also likes the tea from the Long Island. So I was trying to find a way for him to get that in there. And I will say, you know, for any of you who actually know Sir Ezra, you know, through some of the other podcasts, you know, we've had meetups and stuff like that. Hey, let me tell you, there is a big difference between, you know, Sir Ezra and Long Island Ezra. So,
when Long Island Ezra shows up, I'm like, who the hell are you and what are you doing here?
Yeah, it's a move, man. It's a different ball game. So
maybe one time we'll do a special. We'll do a special on Patreon for that.
Yeah, Long
bring
Island
him. Ez. We'll bring him on the show sometime.
Long Island Ez, man. He's a different cat. So
he's crazy. He's crazy.
Perfect. All right. So all right, man. You know, one thing I do want to say here before we kind of wrap up here, you can we have the website. right? So that is another, yeah. That's kind of the new, I think, easy way to send us Ravens, which is bendtheknee.podcast.com. There's just a thing you can click on, and you can just type your Raven in right there. So you can also still, of course, do it through email, btkcast@gmail.com. Obviously, sending us messages on Facebook or Instagram works as well, but I'd say, like, the easiest way is kind of through, like, the website now. I think it's just, boom, super easy. Also, if you want to listen, you can. There's, like, all the links to all the episodes that are there. There's mm-hmm. links to our social media. You can follow me at Super Gainsbros on Instagram or Twitter. You can follow Ezra at WompRat_2M on Instagram and Twitter. And there's links for all that stuff there. So, again, super shout out to, you know, Sir Jimmy. He's been working on that for a long time, and he's got it all dialed in now. So
it's really beautiful. Cool. It's really,
really nice.
Good.
It's really nice. And he just did it. He's just like, hey, can I design you guys a website? We're like, yes. And he did it all. And so a huge shout out to him. You know, cannot stress that enough. Yeah.
Another big one, too, just on that website. If you're ever wondering, how do I get to Discord? Even if you're not a patron and you want to go in there, just kind of like look at the different people are buying, selling, trading, doing different things in there. Shout out to Sir Ant for running that and doing a great job. There's actually on the very front page, if you go to, right there on the front page at the very bottom, there's a link to the Discord. So that's pretty cool. You can go right there. Mm-hmm. People are always asking, what's the link to Discord? And he's got it in there, which is cool.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So also one other thing I want to say here is, you know, we used to we never really got them anymore. But you can actually give us a quick, I believe it's like 3-minute call. Right, Sir Ezra?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want, if you know, we do the Ravens Nest, which is one way to get you guys on the show. But, you know, if you just want to just send us a Raven and you just want to do that, I think the number is 614-547-2350. And that's kind of like through Gmail. You can send those. And we've had some in the past. We haven't really had a lot of them since then. But you do have the option of doing that. And you can send us in a Raven that way if you kind of want to hear your voice on the show. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and even if you don't want to do that and you just want to send like an audio clip, especially if you're one of our, you know, Captain of the Guard, Bannermen, Sworn Swords, what have you, if we know that and it comes through on Patreon or an email and we see an audio clip, that bad boy is getting played. You know, so as long as there's nothing ridiculous and what happens.
Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, so if it's just 3 minutes of you telling us how much we suck, like, I'm probably not going to air it, okay? I mean,
we're going to say bend the knee back
here. Yeah, we're going to say bend the knee, okay? I mean, maybe I'll call in and be like, hey, Sir Ezra sucks.
Get that guy out of here. Who I is remember the guy? Time when he was when he was, you know, not watchful.
Right, yeah.
Unwatchful, oh, God.
Perfect. So, all right, man. Well, we're back. That's all I gotta say. It's great. I'm excited. So we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 1, Arya 1 of A Clash of Kings.
Absolutely. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that the night is dark and full of terrors.